This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree and their V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more and try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/currentgeek.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. My name is Scott Johnson. That guy is Tom Merritt.
Merry Christmas, Scott Johnson.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you, Tom. And happy Hanukkah. I guess that's all in full swing.
Hanukkah is like in progress. Yeah. Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah. Is Festivus happening? Is that all fake?
No, that's later. Oh. That's later. Hold on. Hold your Festivus poll.
Dang it. We have a whole segment about airing our grievances later.
Ah, well.
All right. Fine.
Do we?
No, we don't.
I have a cold.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It's good to be here. We love Fridays, and part of our endeavor is to have a good guest on, good guest or two. Today it's one. We get a guest from all the way in the Great White North. That's Canada, for those not in the know. Returning to the show, my co-host on the Core podcast, among other projects, Bo Schwartz, everyone. Hello, Bo.
Serenity Now.
Yes. Hey, see, you even know. Like, the Seinfeld, it bled all the way up there north, didn't it?
Yes. Oh, we love Seinfeld up here.
Yeah. Yep. Do you find it holds up, or do you?
Oh yeah, okay. I actually just marathoned it, maybe half a year ago or a year ago. You know, like you're doing now, watch a few episodes every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got some real big Seinfeld fans up in Canada. Eh?
That's great. I would have never called that, but I don't know why I wouldn't have called that. That seems fine. It seems
we have the American TV up here, don't you know?
Oh, do you now?
Yeah, we do.
You know, they've got the McDonald's hamburgers too now, Scott.
Whoa, wait a minute. Really?
We know all about that.
We're starting to get your Tim Hortons. We like
you
that.
Can't. That's true. Yeah. We don't have Canadian Tire money yet, but we got some Tim Hortons.
Canadian Tire, wait a minute. That's ringing a bell to me. We've talked about that before.
Oh, Canadian Tire. That's our like home hardware, like, mega store that we have around
so you're it's like your Home Depot kind of thing.
It's a cultural institution because the traditional male who likes to fix mailboxes in their car goes to the Canadian Tire, right, to get like all the parts and tools they need to get the house all in tip-top shape. That's it's Canadian life all in that Canadian Tire.
Gotta get home in time to watch the Habs.
Yeah,
but I will say that I'm actually I bend the knee for American overlords because I'm a Starbucks kind of guy, not a Tim Hortons kind of guy.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah. Because we all down here, everyone thinks they're a real hipster and thinks Tim Hortons is the bomb and they wish we had more here. But you say no.
See, I'm turning Dunkin' these days.
Oh, interesting.
Just got one near my house.
Mm. All right. Tim Hortons is like the McDonald's of coffee places. They're the worst.
Starbucks is also that, as is Dunkin' Donuts.
So what's happening here is a pattern is emerging. If you have a thing that's prominent in your life somewhere culturally and not somewhere else it feels special. Where it's prominent, it feels tired and old. Is that it? Because that's basically what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like McDonald's.
I like Tim Hortons back before they got big and sold out.
Yeah, by putting one store in the States. Boy, that was a terrible time for all of us. Well, it's good to have you here, man.
Thank you.
Let's dive right in. We have some stuff, and it's right here.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Top Talk with Tom Merritt.
You know what I love is when people submit things to our subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com, and I love when we get new people submitting things that get voted up, like Tipo de Cinta. I'm saying it with a Spanish accent. Wow. I don't know if that's right.
Well, we're bringing the world together. Canada, unnamed Spanish country. It's amazing.
Tipo de Cinta wanted us to talk about this quote from Audi's vice president of brand strategy, Sven Schirwith, on self-driving cars. He says, Scott and Bo, for your consideration, in the future, you will not need a business hotel or a domestic flight. We can disrupt the entire business of domestic flight. Why is he saying this? Because people, he says, are going to sleep in their cars, only stop at hotels and service stations to eat and take showers.
I believe that he is partially, if not entirely, correct. This aligns with my own predictions. So I believe that it may not disrupt it to the point of, oh no, what are we going to do? Like not even... I don't even think it'll disrupt it like Uber on taxis level disruption, but it will be enough of one that it will be felt and airlines will have to kind of figure out what they want to do. Because if you're telling me Scott, you can just do a self-driving car for a fraction of the cost. Now, that's the big question, right? Whether the fraction of the cost is the case or not. But if you're telling me I can get into a car and for the next 12 hours drive to San Diego and read and chill and, you know, relax, do whatever I want to do, that sounds way better than even an hour and a half hell flight for a lot more money. So why wouldn't I? That seems like the right kind of disruption to me. Bo, what do you think, man? You're a big traveler. You're a world hopper.
I'm not, but but I think you're thinking too small. You're like, well, you know, this in comparison to flights. And I think that's probably the scope of the article too. But when I read this article, I was thinking, wow, like this could potentially change our whole concept of a home. Like, you know, if you live in a small apartment, and the way that this article was worded, there was a lot of activities that you could do here, like, you know, sleep and prepare for meetings. Why couldn't this be a part of your home life? And so I think in the long term, this is very interesting notion about, you know, home is always a place on earth that you live. Well, why can't that be mobile? Why can't all of our houses just all of a sudden not be rooted where they're built?
Sure.
And so I kind of like the idea that we'd be moving in this direction. We have to take small steps. So this is really exciting. And also I've flown once and I really kind of don't like it. I actually like have some anxiety about flying.
Yeah.
I'd totally be happy to take a week getting somewhere far if I had a very comfortable, relaxing way of getting there where I didn't have to drive the whole time and could, you know, play Hearthstone the whole way, because of course there'd be Wi-Fi throughout the whole journey. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah, one would assume, listen, my assumption about all these predictions, and yours seems to support it, that we'd live in a much more luxurious future where our self-driving cars are going to have every possible amenity. We're never going to be needing anything or wanting anything. That may not be the case. It may be a little more ramshackle than that. But Tom, you don't hold with this notion.
No, sirree, bobber.
All right.
It takes me 11 hours and 30 minutes to drive from Los Angeles to Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Well, it takes me a little less because I, you know, maybe cut a shave off a few hours there.
Yeah.
But we won't that's say compared how, to an know. Hour and 40 minute flight. Mm-hmm. Now, even if you put like 2 hours of travel time at both ends of that flight, you're talking 3 hours and 40 minutes versus 11 hours. I'm going to have to sleep in that car. It's not going to be comfortable. I'm going to be dying for a shower when I get out at the end. I do not see this happening. I do not see me, no matter how luxurious Audi makes their self-driving cars, I do not see me wanting to prefer the slow moving car over the flight. However, that being said, Bo kind of turned me around there with his idea of living in the car. So no longer just an Audi with a bed in it.
Right.
Talking about like a whole row, like mobile home, like RV, but just drives itself. All of a sudden that's starting to sound intriguing.
Or bring it home and have it attach, like just literally pull up to the side of the house and attach as part of the overall home. So that you are, you know,
like a docking station.
Yeah, like a docking station. It would charge. You would it'd empty out your sewage from your dumb trip.
So you have your practical, like your kitchen, your bedroom. Those are in the mobile part.
Sure.
But then the specialty stuff, like your blank room.
Yeah.
That you're developing.
Your blank room. That's the hot new thing, the blank room.
Your game room, all of that stuff, that's in your docking house.
Yeah. I think it's, at the very least, it's interesting, but I'm just saying, I think we've... Like, can we get out in our self-driving cars? Can I be in St. George on my way to Vegas and go, oh, I really got to pee? Can I get out of my self-driving car? Am I allowed?
Maybe you wouldn't have to.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you're, put a toilet. That's a good point. But if it's just some car, like as it stands right now, those Google things that are about the size of nothing.
Oh, yeah, you can stop those and get out and get back.
Okay, so the robot's not going to go, I'm sorry, you must hold it.
I would think not.
We're late. It's not
that
like
might
that.
Be a deal breaker for people.
There was some traffic a while back. Sorry, you're screwed like that. No,
rogue AI is a different issue.
yeah.
But I'd like to give a shout out to all the people who are currently living in their cars and experiencing financial trouble and really irritated by this article.
Yeah, right.
Just we hope for the best for you.
Man, I've slept in my car and I don't want to go back to that. That's maybe part of my resistance to this as well. Captain Kipper wanted us to talk about archaeologists discovering holes in the Pressley Hills in Pembrokeshire, Wales that match up with the stones of Stonehenge. Now, that's cool enough to be like, oh, that's where they got the stones, and they carried them to Wiltshire. The real interesting part is the holes seem to date from somewhere between 3200 and 3400 BC, whereas Stonehenge itself dates to 2900 BC. So we've got at least a 500-year gap between the stones being carved and the stones being brought to Stonehenge. Mm. And one theory is that Stonehenge was built in Wales, and then later on it was like sold off to somebody who moved it to Wiltshire.
Well, that was the other thing I was reading, and I don't know if this article covers that. I meant to check it before, but there was some talk that it's kind of a poor man's monument, and that it wasn't intended to be something super cool that we all look at now. And
well, I think that's just a derivative of, hey, maybe they when they moved it, it was because this isn't that cool anymore.
Yeah, or like this is in the way, or this can't be here anymore. We're going to do a cooler thing here or whatever. But yeah, the more we learn about Stonehenge, I feel like the more we're setting ourselves up for some giant, horrible disappointment. Like if we're going to eventually get to the end of it all and go, oh, these were just like, I don't know. I don't know what they're going
to
be.
It's going to open a portal to Azeroth.
I hadn't thought of that. All right. Then we'll be real disappointed.
Turn your red skin green.
Yeah.
Not careful.
No, that's cool though. I mean, whatever. Stonehenge, you still got me, buddy. You're a cool thing. You stand out, you know?
I just really appreciate that there are people looking into this, because to a lot of us out there, these are just rocks that some people a long time ago made. And it's very cool that, you know, this is fascinating enough for people to study. So,
well, we still don't know how they stacked them, right? That's still the big mystery, is nobody knows.
Not exactly. Mm. It's not like it was, it's magical or anything. They're like, huh, I wonder how they got them up there. They're also precisely aligned astronomically, which is not unusual for these kinds of henges. They're often used, they're often lined up with equinoxes and sunrises and sunsets. So, and that's not unusual. So that makes sense. But there is a mystery about why did they do this? Why did they put them in that shape? I've always been fascinated by it. So the idea that it was actually built in Wales and then later somebody moved it, I don't think it's, all these articles are like, oh, it's Stonehenge is a used monument. It's like the London Bridge, which was sold off and moved to Arizona. I don't know if it's that.
Well, those that have a practicality to them that we can recognize, and then
do you think Stonehenge was a tourist attraction of 2900 BC? Like, oh, hey, remember Stonehenge used to be in Wales? Well, come on and see it in Wiltshire now. You don't have to travel.
I mean, we just as humans like a good story, and I think we all secretly hope it's like, oh, there was a band of giants who lived in the foothills, and they came and did this as a circus trick every other week, and charged admission. Everyone brought 3 eggs from their farm and they could watch them put rocks on top of each other. That's what we want, but we're not going to get it. It's going to turn out to be like a hoax eventually. And I don't mean a hoax perpetrated modernly. It'll be some guy thousands of years ago dorking around with us.
You think this is just some guy trolling the future?
It feels like it sometimes, because wow. This
the
and
first
like
troll.
Yeah. What are the big heads on the beach? What's that? I forget what that's called.
Easter Island.
Easter Island. I'm always thinking that someone's going to come out with that and say, ah, yeah, that's just a bunch of foam rubber or something. I don't know why. I just don't trust anybody. The internet has made me skeptical of everything I ever see. So even like, if we have it in the modern era to troll each other on the internet, who's to say we didn't have it in us to do it 2,000-3,000 years ago?
Well, I've got a product for you then, Scott.
All right.
Chubb Corporation, now offering folks in the UK 50,000 pounds worth of insurance against severe online harassment.
Whoa.
Don't know if they cover 3,900-year-old harassment, but the money would cover the cost of physical relocation, counseling, and compensation for time off work, as well as reputation management. They define cyberbullying as 3 or more incidents from a single person or group of people, and you can start signing up for insurance January 1st.
That seems like a lot, though. Oh, no, they don't say what like the payments would be, like a monthly payment.
No, the premiums are not. You gotta contact them, and then they evaluate your particular situation and risks and stuff before they give you the premiums.
Bo, does that sound like a racket, or do you think that's a viable thing in today's day?
I keep thinking that, you know, if they're offering it, it's because they intend to make money with it. Mm. So. That being said, what I'm picturing right now is, let's say I'm married, and let's say my brother's married, and let's say I, you know, am a bad person and I have an affair. Okay.
All right.
And then, so my brother feels betrayed, gets mad, and is posting online that I'm a jerk and telling everybody blah, blah, blah. And it turns into online harassment. Do I get money for that? Like, what are like all the people are not going to understand what the limits are that qualify for harassment, because there's a lot of stuff that's just interpersonal conflict that can devolve into harassment that can actually be serious issues. So like, you know, I feel like they're going to be fielding a lot of, you know, turning down a lot of people. Like what the standards are for issuing reimbursement is going to be very shady.
Yeah. The people who are going to sign up for this are the folks who are celebrities or even minor celebrities, folks feeling harassed by Gamergate, who like literally have felt like they needed to move from their house. So yeah, there's going to be some pretty stringent explanations of what constitutes actual harassment and when you can actually make a claim. But that's true of all insurance.
Well, and I was going to say
that about car insurance, like, wow, people could just ding up their car and get insurance. The insurance industry is pretty good at defining, like, this is how you get paid and this is how we prove that it actually happened.
Yeah, it's the good and bad of insurance. And I don't mean to Canadaize you here, but it might be possible. Well, like, you guys don't have, like, the way your healthcare works is so different from ours. Like, when I think about how many weird little loopholes there might be in this, it doesn't surprise me at all because I've had to deal with health insurance for years and they all have that. It's like, well, was it a pre-existing condition? Did you come in here? Did you break your arm 3 weeks before or after the other thing? Is your premium, you know, like there's all these complicated things you have to do in order to get your benefits. I'm sure it's the same here. Or if it's not, they're crazy. I mean, it'd have to be. It'd have to be like very set, defined guidelines of when someone's being harassing. But what you say makes perfect sense to me. That is a nuanced, complicated, trolley mess out there. You know,
I just think, like, if I'm the insurance company, I don't want to give insurance to Anita Sarkeesian. I mean, I'm going to do it because business practices, but I want to give it to people who think that they're going to be harassed online, like who might have kids and they're worried about what might happen, but who knows? And on the odds are they're probably not going to get harassed. Like, it does happen. It is a serious issue, but a lot of people go without being victimized by this. And I just feel like there's, you know, this is a fabricated need for a lot of people. I just think they're being opportunistic about this. Is it a real issue? Yes. Should we be having insurance for it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's a hard call. But you made a good point. Anita Sarkeesian is like she's the Jackie Chan of the action film world. She's uninsurable when it comes to online harassment because she's always a target.
You might need insurance.
Yeah.
Right. Let's say you're a female game journalist right now. Maybe you'd be interested in paying $50 a month for this or $500 a year, £500 a year, I guess.
But would they go, would they give
because
you?
Because you look at the cost of having to move and all of this stuff and thinking like, gosh, you know, I'd hate for that to happen to me, but it could. Mm-hmm. That's the definition of any insurance is, are there enough people worried that could actually happen to them that it makes it worthwhile for people to buy in enough numbers that the insurance company can make money? And this insurance company is saying, yeah, we think it is.
Would they have to turn her down, though, because she's a major pre-existing condition, for lack of a better
Anita,
way?
Anita? Yeah. Or just a general
Anita
journalist?
And her specifically. Because I understand what you mean generally.
I mean, like, Lloyd's of London will insure anybody for anything. So yeah. At a certain point, any insurance company can decide, like, oh, well, this is too much of a risk. They can turn down people for various reasons. I don't know that they would for her, though.
They might
just give her a higher premium.
Would Lloyd's of London insure me for when I told the guy who was robbing me that I was insured by Lloyd's of London? They beat me up more because it sounds so dumb to say Lloyd's of London. Would they insure me for that, too?
Possibly.
Sorry, Lloyd's of London, you're fine. It just sounds like
even insurable.
It just sounds so hoity-toity to me. It always has. It's just a problem.
What, Lloyd's of London? Yeah. Sounds hoity-toity, or the idea of insuring you for anything?
No, the name Lloyd's of London specifically. It's like saying,
now you're just being prejudiced. Exactly. Against snotty people.
No, exactly. All I ever know.
This might be online harassment. Lloyd's of London, I hope, insures itself.
I hope so. Jeez. Yeah, I clearly have a stereotype.
Bo brought us that story, and he also brought us this next story. Troy Paquette and Moses Lamb. We're talking about people who lived in places with lots of air pollution. They live in the clear air of the Canadian Rockies and decided to put a bag of that air that they breathe every day up on eBay for 99 cents. It sold so fast, they decided to do it a second time. That next bag sold for $168. So they kept doing it, and now the two have formed a company called Vitality Air that sells various sizes of air canisters from Banff and Lake Louise, Canada, for $15 to $46 all over the world. They're even talking to distributors in China.
Wait, I have Rockies here. I could do this. Is that what you're telling me, Bo? Totally, I could just go bag it up in the mountain and bring it down with me and sell it.
If it's clean. I haven't done any air testing, so I don't know if it's tainted, but clearly the Canadian Rockies are up to some kind of standard. People want it.
Weird.
Maybe.
That seems weird to me. That's like saying, oh, I don't know, I got some sand off the beach of Borneo, and you know what that stuff does? What? Oh, cures cancer, so I'm going to sell it on the... I mean, and they're not making claims like that, but...
No, that's a good point. They're not actually saying this air does anything, as far as I can tell.
For aesthetic pleasure, although I like picturing a guy in China getting his package... cracking open that canister and going, working it in. Finally.
Yeah, some big conglomerate of Chinese factories. The guy's just rich beyond words, and the only thing he wants is fresh air in Beijing. But here's the thing, though. Like, if you bottle up air and say, here's some air from this mountain or whatever, how do you assure the guy that you've got it in there? It didn't leak out. There aren't molecules from other particles in there from something else. Like, how do you ensure your product? Lloyd's of London.
I mean, there are airtight canisters, Scott.
Oh, are there?
Yeah, airtight, meaning like airtight.
Right. So that no air can get out? That's what you're telling me?
If they're responsibly selling their air, they're sure they're selling it in an airtight canister.
Do they just take it in the air and go, whoosh, like swing their arm and then, okay, quick, put it on, quick, fast. And then
that was more where my head was going. It was like, okay, how do you collect it and certify it? So that people are sure it came from Banff.
You can't make it in a factory because it's going to have all kinds of factory particulate in the air. So you need to actually take those cans up to the mountain and just close it up.
But how are you going to? But how do you prove that? Like if I could do a thing right now where I took an airtight canister, an expensive one, even put some air in it, came over to you guys and said, guys, this is from Everest. This air. It's really rare.
This industry isn't regulated. It's a big issue here in Canada. I mean, Canadian air is like our number one export. But there's no regulatory body. It's the Wild West, kind of like the way e-cigarettes are, you know?
Well, it's like bottled water used to be. People are like, oh, it's just tap water. And now they have to be like, oh, no, we certify that it comes from a spring in the Ozarks.
Canadian air is your biggest export.
That's not true, incidentally. No. I have no idea what
Yet.
It is.
Yet. Well, yeah. When it snows more, we blame it on you. Is that all right?
Do we bait? Oh, right, because they send their air down.
Yeah, lots of it.
Jet streams. That's jerks. True.
Yeah, it's free, but, you know.
Sorry.
Don't have to pay for that.
Sorry.
Ericsson's Consumer Lab surveyed 100,000 customers and found that half of them thought mobile technology would be a thing of the past by 2021. The savvy survey respondents believe artificial intelligence will supersede many smartphone functions.
Whoa. So... that's interesting. But
it feels like a selection bias issue.
It does to me too.
Right? I don't get the feeling that Ericsson's Consumer Lab went very far to say we found a representative sample, though they did survey people outside of their home of Sweden.
So they're saying 50,000 people thought mobile technology would be a thing of the past by 2021.
That's just dumb.
It is dumb.
I'm sorry.
It is.
Like, I get what's not dumb is, oh, artificial intelligence will take some of those things that we do with our phones now and make them easier to use, right? While we're driving, we'll be able to talk to it or whatever. But I still want to play, I don't know, Hearthstone on a screen.
Right, right.
In the magically air of my mind.
Well, also, the phone is going to be, you may not call it a phone or whatever, but we need devices to convey the AI. So it's not like that's going away. It's not like suddenly there'll be some omnipotent thing that just exists in the air. Well, maybe. I don't know. I say that, but maybe something like that will one day, or some kind of weird mesh
network. As you say this will never happen.
It'll happen, yeah.
It's dangerous.
What do you think, Bo?
I think if it does happen, it's going to be something along the lines of the way HoloLens is going. Like, I feel like human behavior really likes and is fascinated by touching boxes and having it change color and having pop-ups and things to do. That's very much our draw on our smartphones is like, oh, ding, what's going on? So if we're not to have smartphones, maybe we've got a projector surgically implanted into our wrist and we bring up our, command console there and start doing Twitter in holographic form with a keyboard on our wrist. Like, it might be, I don't know, 5 years seems pretty enthusiastic. What's the word I'm looking for? Just bullish. Optimistic. Thank you.
Yeah.
But, if we are to replace smartphones, it's still got to have that feeling of I'm doing something, even though I'm doing like an... animal doesn't know what I'm doing. Like, it looks ridiculous to an outside observer. Like, it needs to have that interaction that we like, that our brains are stimulated by.
But the whole idea, mobile technology, I guess maybe it's just such a broad definition because mobile technology is mobile technology, whatever form that takes. So however we're doing these things while we're moving about, that is mobile technology, AI or not. So I don't get their meaning with that. But maybe there's more to it. Maybe they just meant, hey, you're not going to have a smartphone anymore. It's going to be little sensors and cameras and projectors. And
but I still think you'll have various screen sizes. Am I wrong there?
No,
Am I starting to get stuck in my ways?
Well,
like,
what if it's a, I mean, well, Bo's idea of a holographic projection of a screen in front of your wrist. I mean, that's a screen though. You know,
I'm a big fan of Deus Ex, and I'll be first in line to get my arms cut off for robot arms and glasses that give me all the feedback I need about the world around me, or like the virtual light glasses in the William Gibson novel. Like, if you make that stuff really usable, probably I won't need a smartphone. But until that day comes, a smartphone is pretty, there's a lot of ingenuity in that little box. And that's why we all like it. Yeah. So.
And as broadly defined, that's still mobile technology. So there you go. That's my whole point.
Piscator NF sent us the tantalizing news that Deadline's Mike Fleming Jr. was told by someone in the know that Idris Elba is the frontrunner to play Roland Deschaine in the movie adaptation of Stephen King's Dark Tower series. Apparently Matthew McConaughey is in talks to play the Man in Black.
When the announcement was first made about Matthew McConaughey's involvement, everyone assumed he was meant to play Roland and could probably do a pretty good job. Like I heard that one. Oh yeah, okay. That's a reasonable pick.
Chase the Man in Black across the desert. Yeah. I didn't do it because it was cool.
All right. I think I see him off in the distance. All right. But he's not now. He's Man in Black, which is a brilliant move. Actually, that's a great place for him to be. He can be his weird, kind of psychotic self as that role perfectly. That is going to be the Randall Flagg role for those who know who I'm talking about. And Roland, the role of Roland, why no one has thought of Idris Elba before now, is it's crazy to me that we haven't even thought about it.
The only thing that makes me skeptical of this is Idris Elba is going to be Doctor Who. Idris Elba is going to be 007. Every iconic character Idris Elba gets touted as. So I'm a little holding back my otherwise insane enthusiasm because I think he'd be great.
Oh, have you read the books, the Dark Tower books by chance?
No, I've not read The Dark Tower. I don't know much about The Dark Tower. I've heard all my life that it's great, and I'm really looking forward to this because TV's got this resurgence right now. If they do it right, this is going to be a really great time to discover it for the first time. So,
sure.
Matthew McConaughey, yes. Idris Elba, I love that man. He's my one, I guess, you know. You have that, like, you have those conversations where you're like, well, if I had to experience homoeroticism once, which guy would it be with? Idris is that guy for me. So I took it to a weird place, but yeah. So yes, put him in the movie. I'm super stoked
wrong with it.
And I think a lot of people think this way, and that's why he's always touted as the front runner for everything, because of some repressed homoeroticism amongst television and film fans.
Oh, okay. I was thought you were going to stop with
it's you. Also unrepressed, firmly accepted homoeroticism in some cases.
Sure, yeah, that too. But I mean, for those of us that are still working through some of our issues,
heterosexual love from females.
Oh yeah, my wife thinks has a real crush on this man.
I bet Idris Elba is a few lesbians one.
Yeah, he's got some converts.
I mean, he's just that guy, right?
He is that guy.
Totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. But this sounds like it's got, I mean, it's a few sources now saying, yeah, it looks like there's something going on. He's negotiating. It doesn't mean it's a done deal, but the reason it makes me anxious as a fan of the series is just it's taken so long and we're finally maybe getting somewhere. So I'm really hoping that this isn't just pie in the sky stunt casting, that this really is him. Or at least something's happening so we can get done and move on and make the movie. I was more pleased to hear them say, in most of the stuff I've read, as Roland Deschaine in The Gunslinger, the first novel in the 7-book series, that made me excited because it reminded me that they're not going to now try to cram 7 books into 2 hours, that they're going to try to have a decent go at this with some kind of franchise. I still think it would be better as serialized Netflix or HBO or Amazon, somebody... television style stuff, Game of Thrones level money thrown at it, but I don't think that's going to happen. It sounds like it won't happen. So if that's the case, I'll take what I can get. Very exciting.
Long days and pleasant nights.
That's right,
Idris Elba. Captain Kipper would like to remind you that Star Wars: The Force Awakens will be in theaters in 1 week.
Whoa!
1 week.
Whoa! What? It really is a week, isn't it?
Yeah, in case that's too far away, what Kev Kipper actually submitted to the subreddit was the international trailer, which has more footage. It's written here, Jenny wrote it as spoilerish footage. All footage, I guess, could be considered spoiler, but there's even a little new stuff here. And then Guy from Trinidad gave us a Bloomberg article where you can count how many times the Force is used in each Star Wars movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's an infographic.
Oh, I love that. What is there any way to say what we gleaned from the new footage that without, I don't know. It's not a spoiler. It's just a trailer, right? Who cares?
I mean, it's a spoiler. It's spoilerish because it's giving you a little more and a little more and a little more. It's not like gigantic spoiler, like Rey is Yoda's daughter or anything like that.
Oh my gosh, this chart is awesome.
Yeah, the chart is pretty crazy though.
Oh, this is so cool. Okay. All right. So good versus evil, only 4% of the 805 minute Star Wars film canon. So
episodes
contained.
1 through 6.
Right.
That's all.
So yeah. 34 minutes, 1 second of total force use. And light has it by a mile, 9 to 25
minutes, 18 seconds light, 9 minutes, 35 seconds dark.
Wow. And then it breaks it down by character. The least is Darth Maul, which is unfortunate. I really quite liked him.
I call him Dennis.
Dennis. Lots of Luke Skywalker, Obi-Wan, and Yoda. But yeah, your least Sith is Maul and Dooku. Wow. That's pretty crazy to me. Oh, Vader. It's interesting. Vader and Anakin Skywalker, as separated here, are nearly equal, just about the same. So that's funny. Anyway, that's so cool. I'm going to look at this for hours when we're done with the show tonight. This is really awesome.
Oh, yeah. You can spend a long time with this. Thank you, Marlon, for submitting that. Bo, are you going to go see Star Wars Force Awakens?
Yeah, this is our Christmas celebration. On the 24th, the family's all bought tickets in a super comfy theater, and we're going to celebrate Saturnus by watching the new Star Wars film.
You're going not till the 24th, eh?
Yeah, so I got to black out all my Twitter feeds and Facebook stuff, and it's going to be a rough week.
It is going to be weird, right?
That brings us to mentioning a little programming note for current geek fans. You know, a lot of times we just don't have an episode on a week for one reason or another. Next Friday, there will not be an episode of Current Geek come out because we're waiting until Monday to make sure that Scott and everybody who's going to be on the show has actually had a chance to see the movie.
Yep.
Because we can't do a Current Geek the week of Star Wars coming out and not talk about the movie.
Yeah, it seems dumb. Plus, I'm out of town the whole weekend, so it'll be good because I'll be back Monday fresh and ready to go. So you and I will have seen it. We'll both have seen it on the 18th, 19th.
I'm seeing it on the 17th.
Oh, well, you're getting some special hoo-ha going on.
No, no, it's just that's the first public showing is 7 p.m. on the 17th.
Oh, okay. So, and without giving away too much, how did the whole that whole thing go with the whole two times thing? Can you spill the beans? Remember, we were talking about how you were going to see it twice, but maybe one time.
Oh, I'm going to see it twice.
Okay, so no matter what you're seeing.
Oh, yeah, that was never in question. My wife has a conflicting thing at the YouTube space with a person showing up that she's been wanting to meet.
Yeah.
Then that event is overlapping with the premiere of Star Wars. So that's between her and her God.
Yeah, and I thought Ernest Borgnine was dead, so this is all good news for me. All right.
Oh, you blew it. Now everybody knows giving it away.
It is actually, he is actually dead. But anyway,
he's still going to be a YouTube space.
So we're going to see it on the 18th or whatever it is. I forget now. The opening night we're seeing it. And then we're going to see it again. We'll be out of town, but we're seeing it there. And then we're going to see it again on the 24th. So we have two sets of tickets.
Oh, okay.
A lot like you. So, Bo, by the time you're seeing it, I'll have only been into my second viewing. It'll be fine. Canada gets everything late. It's fine.
Canada gets it at the same time.
No, we get everything at the same time.
I'm just saying, a lot of times you get things late, like Netflix stuff. You got Netflix way late.
Oh, that kind of stuff.
The IT world, does hold us behind sometimes. You could try phones first, and you are great. We don't even have Hulu up here. I'd love to check out some Hulu, but it's not available in my country, and I don't know how to get around that.
Yeah, there's ways.
Of course you don't.
There's
I
ways.
Have no idea.
The terms of service.
I would never break any rules.
No, you're a law-abiding Canadian Mountie, man. You're fine.
That's right.
Don't worry about it.
I would never dishonor the Prince and Princess of Canada.
Yeah, that's right, buddy. So we're going to take a break. Before we do, though, reminder that we are heavily involved in a hot new thing for you, dear listener, to help you help this show continue to be on the air. We're always looking for creative, interesting ways to help support this show. And everybody out there is like, well, just do another Patreon. We're like, we do that with other stuff. And it's, why do that? Why not try to do something kind of special? So we came up with the Crate Joy program for Frog Pants. And it's for this show specifically. No other show on the network's doing this. Frogpants.cratejoy.com. The Current Geek Goodie Box. Tom, we should have probably a name for it. Geek Box. Box of Geeky Goodness.
It's the Current Geek Box.
The box.
It's a box full of currently geeky stuff.
The CG box, we'll call it. And that means all kinds of stuff. Stuff I create, stuff Tom creates, stuff we get from guests, stuff we get from other outside sources, lots of cool swag. If you're familiar with like monthly subscriptions to small boxes and crates that come to your home and you open them and there's all kinds of rad nerd stuff in there, well, you're in the right place because that is exactly what this is. You can get signed up right now by going to frogpants.cratejoy.com. That's cratejoy, C-R-A-T-E, joy, J-O-Y.com. And sign up and get on the ball because this is going to be way fun and we're super stoked about it.
Get on the ball. There might even be a ball. There might. You don't know.
There could be a ball.
America scores and wins.
Oh, Bo, you don't even know what trivia I brought for you today.
Oh, I'm nervous. I'm so nervous. Let's do this.
All right. We got the pop quiz. It's where we ask us a series of questions to our guest or guests. And today, Bo is going to answer questions in an area of his expertise or one that I deemed appropriate. It turns out what I deemed appropriate was, hold on, I got to pull it up. Make sure I don't say it wrong. Here it is. This is something you recently just consumed and therefore should know a lot about. It's Amazon Prime's Man in the High Castle trivia.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. He just watched the whole thing.
Now, just the TV series or the book?
Just the TV series.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going strictly off TV. Because I think, like me, he hasn't read the book, right? That's not a thing you've read. Is that true, Bo?
No, I haven't read the book, actually. Right. This is my first consumption. Wait. It's the first time I've consumed The Man in the High Castle.
Okay, great. Good. Yeah. Well, we'll let his family and closest kin know that he has been consumed by you. Here's your first question. Oh, if you get it right, if you get it wrong, Tom will score the whole thing, and then by the end, we'll see how you did. First question. In what year does The Man in the High Castle take place? In the TV show, not the book.
I feel like that was mentioned once right at the beginning, and I probably wasn't paying attention, so 1962.
You are correct. Nicely done.
What?
Yep. 1962. You knew it was the 60s, but...
Yeah. That was a total shot in the dark.
You get a full point shot in the dark and hit it bonus.
Wow.
Nicely done. Go with your gut, dude. Number next. What is the name of the first episode of The Man in the High Castle?
What is the name of the first episode?
Yeah, the first episode, the pilot.
Oh, it's not pilot, is it?
No. It is definitely not pilot.
Who is the man in the high castle?
You are incorrect. It is the New World. The New World.
All right.
Next up. In the episode Sunrise, Juliana meets someone folding what kind of origami animal?
A crane, I believe.
You are correct. Nicely done. Was that the trade minister? What's his name? Was he the one doing it?
No, it was... Well, I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, yeah, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. Next up.
It was the guy from Blade Runner.
Wait, was there a guy from Blade
Adama.
Runner? Oh, yeah, he was in this.
Rutger Hauer.
At whose house does Joe celebrate VA Day?
At whose house?
Yeah.
His own house.
No. No.
What? VA Day.
At whose house does Joe?
Oh, Joe. Oh, Ober Schmitten für her Joe John. John Smith. I mixed up Joe and John.
We're going to give you a half point for getting it on the second round.
Yeah.
Then we're going to give you a full point for Ober Schmittenberger.
Ober Schmittenberger, yeah.
Because that was awesome.
That was amazing. Okay. Oh, that made my day.
Mixed up on my Germans.
All right. Who? Where the hell am I? Oh, okay. Here we go. Here's a question that I don't know how you would know this, but who directed the episode A Way Out?
Oh, is it Adam Arkin?
You are incorrect, although I saw his name on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Daniel Percival is his name. Again.
Oh, Daniel Percival.
Oh, you know, the old Percival treatment that episode got. Luke Kleintank plays what character in the show?
Luke Tyneclank?
Kleintank.
Yeah, not Luke Tyneclank. He's not in this one.
No. He doesn't even have a Screen Actors Guild card.
No, does he play Frank Frick? Or Frink?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, I could, but it would ruin the thing.
Oh, is it? I'm going to say
Frank.
Oh,
is that your answer?
Frank Frink.
All right, Frank Frink. Oh, if I always forget that guy's name was Frank Frink, like literally. Joe Blake is the correct answer. Joe Blake.
Joe, who went to Schmittenschmeyer.
Yeah. Let's see. How many zones are the United States divided into in the alternate history this show takes place in?
Three. The Nazi side, the Japanese states, and the neutral zone.
You are correct. Nicely done. I have a question about neutral zone, but it's a thing for Tom off the air sometime, because I have real questions about that. In regards to what the book
does. There are no Cardassians.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. Forget the whole thing. Bajorans, really, but it's fine. Same answers. Different question, same answer. Final question. In what episode does the Marshal arrive? Oh, I love that guy.
I want to say it's episode 2.
Three.
I knew it. That was my first gut instinct, and I should have.
You should have gone with it like 1962.
Lose a half point for ignoring your gut instinct.
That episode, by the way, was called The Illustrated Woman. It was freaking fantastic when they introduced him. I love that guy. All right. Those are your questions. Tom, add it up. How do you do?
You got a very solid round number of 5 points. Well done,
bro. Yeah, that's pretty good. On average, that's high. Well, I mean, you've been here before. That's actually pretty high.
I think that's better than my last score, so yeah. I'll take it.
I'm impressed. Everybody, Oberschmitten Freer Schwartz has done a great job today. This episode of Current Geek has been brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a good, simple payment solution, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer multiple payment types. Start accepting PayPal, Bitcoin, Apple Pay, Venmo, cards, and more with one single, simple integration. How about getting $50,000 off in your first transactions absolutely fee-free? Go to BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek and try it out today. That's BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Oberschmitten Schwartz. It's forecast. It's where we predict the future, and we try to do it with the best intentions. It's usually something to do with science or culture or way off future that we can barely see now. And so, Bo, you brought one to the table, man. Why don't you tell us your idea? What do you think the future holds for us?
All right. I was reading an article. I think it was Mark Zuckerberg actually came out, and because you know Donald Trump was all like, you know, crummy about immigration and particular Muslims. So Mark Zuckerberg came out and was like, well, our people, you know, fully support, you know, the Muslim faith. And this is not reflective of Facebook's values. And I guess because Donald Trump does have a presence on Facebook, like it matters. And I thought the way Mark Zuckerberg, well, the way I read the language was our people. I was like, what if our people, what if Facebook was a country? What if at some point they had amassed enough data and enough control and money and just influence is to say, why don't we just buy, like, take a piece of land? Or I'm not sure how that transition would happen, but that, you know, clearly the countries we have now were founded at some point. Who are founding the countries of the future? Because I think lines will be drawn inevitably at some point. And what if it was social media that was at the forefront of creating this new world with its own military and system of government, and everybody had to be registered and had to actively use social media to be a productive and plugged in, connected member of the society? And that was kind of scary and also kind of exciting. And I don't think I want Mark Zuckerberg for president, but you know, if Donald Trump can run, maybe someday that guy will run.
President Zuckerberg.
Well, Facebookland.
This sounds like a thing Tom would write about in NaNoWriMo or something. It's very much
Facebookia.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like something Neal Stephenson would write about in his book Snow Crash. a little bit. I mean, it's that same idea, right? Where corporations have taken over politically, and I've definitely played with that idea in some of the stuff that I've written too. I think there's a couple of things going on here. First of all, mandatory social networks. Definitely going to see that from dictatorships, right? They're going to try to control it. Like North Korea, seriously, going to do their own social network. You know that's going to happen.
Sure.
But corporations becoming countries, that's been kicked around not only fictionally, but people, when Google was starting to get big, they were talking about, what if Google became its own country? Google has a bigger gross domestic product internally than, you know, some small countries. It has its own internal politics and land acquisition and power plants. And as Facebook has risen, Amazon, Apple, all of these companies are getting big enough where you wonder, like, could they buy a little or just build a platform out in the ocean and put their data out there and say, you know what, we're done with your spying and your safe harbor rules and your data transfer rules. And we're just going to have all of our data out here in the ocean where none of you get to say what we do with it. And we're just going to operate from there and screw all of you guys. And then that starts a movement of corporations to declare themselves independent and leads to this world that Bo's talking about, where corporations now are quasi-governmental entities.
Well, could you? Okay, so let's say, I don't know, Apple. Let's say Apple's got $900 billion in cash or whatever. and they perceive a threat from the governing body that controls most of what Apple can do, which it happens to be here in the United States. So let's say they see that threat and they say, nope, that's it. We're done. We're sick of being under your tyranny of taxation or whatever their problem is. And they do this thing with the platform out in the ocean. Would they have to do that by force? Would they, like, how would they? They would, right? They'd have to have
go in international waters and build it and then say, look, if you want to connect to our data, great. If not, screw you.
And there's nothing the U.S.
could do.
And
that's why I think it's a bigger deal. It's more of a possibility for somebody like Facebook or Amazon that controls data access than it would be for somebody like Apple.
Okay, that makes sense. So if you're, go ahead, Will.
Here's my sense from the social media angle is that, you mentioned North Korea, like we could force people to do things, but I think what we're seeing from a lot of these companies is they're trying to figure out a way to not have to force us, like to master behavioral science and to get the vast majority to just want to do these things anyway, like to anticipate what we do before we do it and sort of govern that way in some weird way. Like I feel like these companies are really studying human behavior and how they can get us to click things and to vote for things and to debate about things.
That's really interesting. The idea that these companies rise above governments the way that governments have risen above like local councils and city governments.
Yeah. Like Facebook knows more than Statistics Canada about Canadians.
For sure. And then governments remain, but they're sort of vestigial remnants of a previous age, and these companies are really running things because they just do, and we all participate in them.
Do you see in this future, Bo, do you see that they have their own privatized armies and things, because that's how they maintain a real world sort of defense against real governments who would rather see them go down than have this power? I mean, would that have to happen, right?
Potentially. Yeah. Like imagine being part of the Facebook military where you have the green fatigues and a big like button on the side of your side of your
thumbs code. Up.
Wow.
The thumb wars.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they probably have to have security forces of some sort, but if they do it right, if they do what Bo's suggesting, they don't need a military.
Yeah.
In fact, that would be counterproductive. You want people to just feel like, oh no, I'm doing this because I want to.
Yeah, and if they are, then there's no need for...
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. He who controls behavior controls everything.
And if they can get the money to flow their way, ultimately, that is how we confer power, is through the amount of monetary influence that we have. So it's very interesting.
But what if at the end of the day, somebody just comes out and says, all right, look, all the existing governments, we need to get ourselves together and declare that all money is fake and always ever was. And it's like Tom was saying the other day, it's just based on a transactional trust, but there's really nothing to it. It's paper and sometimes gold and sometimes stuff, but at the end of the day it's just stuff and it doesn't really matter.
You can buy it. Well, Facebook will guarantee it, and they'll you know, you can get your groceries from Facebook, and so if you want to eat, you like Facebook because they are the ones with the groceries.
I don't think the governments declare like our money is worthless anymore. I mean, that would just be a disaster, and people would still use it anyway. They're like, well, we're in the habit of it, and there's not that much around. What is more likely is currencies collapse, right? Mm-hmm. You have runaway inflation or something, and then Facebook is a better store of value than actual currency. That kind of thing can happen. I mean, there's also the opposite side is happening. Like there's something like Estonia where they're offering e-citizenship. And let's say something breaks down in your country and you're an e-citizen of Estonia, you can still get access to some basic services or something that way. I mean, you could have virtual countries being created.
That's pretty interesting. And sub-countries even. Ooh, what if Reddit was one of the governments? So, this could be a fun project, actually.
They would be the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah.
Reddit would be, you know.
Would they
some
be?
Some version of Reddit would be the Rebel Alliance of this world.
Or would they be, what is it, Order 66? What's the order that killed all the Jedi? Would they maybe?
Order 66.
They're like the clones, and they're going to turn on us any second. That's what they're like. I want to quote Bo Schwartz today as saying my favorite thing of the show, and that's this. Quote, Facebook, the one with the groceries, unquote. Nicely done. Anyway, great thinking, great thought. And actually, there's some fun to be had with this idea. Like, take actual companies. It's one thing to write a book or a story about a bunch of fake, you know, Uber corporations in the future. But it's something altogether different to say, all right, where's PepsiCo and all this? And if you made them all nation states, how would they behave? And
I mean, they are.
I guess they are nation states, aren't they? I guess they
just don't have governing power yet.
Right. You're freaking me out, man.
If you've ever worked for corporations these days, it's very much an us versus them. Like you talk about having the, do you have what it takes to be X employee, the X values, and do you embody those values and all that you do? Like it's, that sounds like, you know, pledging to a country and to uphold, you know, the rights and responsibilities of your citizenship. It's not much different.
And they govern your behavior. There are employee policies that you're like, well, you know, sure, in your home country, you're allowed to dress however you want. But at work, you're going to dress this way.
Well, in theory, that you know, a home environment with parents and kids is a small form of government. But sure. I guess what's the tipping? Is there a tipping point? I don't know when it changes. And that's the part you have to watch out for or know the signs of.
Especially because companies go across borders, right?
Right.
And so they have a uniform system of government that transcends national boundaries.
Now they got weird space currency they can just cryptically send around to each other in the dark web. And
they don't have that.
Oh.
That is just a thing that someone made and open sourced that a lot of companies are actually not sure how to use.
Yeah, I just like
that's actually a threat to corporate control.
Yeah, they don't like that, do they?
Because they can't manipulate that system as easily.
Yeah. I just like to say inflammatory things about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general.
You can imply that only the drain I use it.
We'll only do it because you're here, because then you'll correct
space
it.
Go to space.
All right, that was good stuff. We also get feedback here on the show. CurrentGeek@gmail.com is an email address you can use on the regular. That's CurrentGeek@gmail.com. And we got an email from Angel Heart who says this. Do you guys remember Angel Heart, the movie? It had one of the Cosby kids in it.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, and it was like a scary thing.
Here it's spelled Engelhart, though.
Oh. Well, maybe it is Engelhart. Oh, I read it as Angelhart off the top of my eyes there. But
well, yeah, right. I did too at first.
Maybe that's the joke. They've made it Engelhart, but usually
maybe
it's
into
Angelhart.
Geometry.
Who knows? Trick. Anyway, it says, I'm really worried about the future of all non-Marvel-controlled comic properties. X-Men and Superman, or excuse me, Spider-Man and all of it. Do we have any hope? Says
all right,
Engelhart.
First of all, Engelhart.
Yeah.
Non-Marvel controlled comic properties are like The Walking Dead. Mm. You're saying non-Marvel controlled Marvel properties.
Yes.
As
I think that's what he means. He or she means. Yes.
I think that's what she means.
Oh, semantic slam from Tom.
Yeah. But
the old SS.
I don't know, man. I think Scott and I had different reactions to that X-Men trailer that came out today because I liked it.
I don't know. Okay, let's talk about that for a second. So I didn't hate it or dislike it. I'm just concerned, and I don't even know why I'm concerned. There's something about the vibe of it that felt weird. And by weird, I mean, well, all right, the last X-Men movie didn't exactly blow me away. I thought First Class was a really interesting new direction. And so I was kind of hoping that the last movie would stick a little closer to that. And instead, they're like, nope, we got to trump out everybody who's been in the old one, especially Patrick Stewart and Sir Ian McKellen. And they need to look like they can at least still use their powers a little bit. But let's just drag those horses out for one more ride. And it just felt weird to me. I didn't like it. This one, I don't know. Apocalypse seems a little too on the head kind of comic book villain thing. The dialogue seemed a little on the cheese bag side. I don't know. Just felt like a swing and a miss to me. And I hope I'm wrong, but
I looked at it and I was like, wow, the X-Men is actually, I forget, is one of the few non-Marvel produced Marvel movies that seems like it could be great. Bryan Singer doing a great job here.
Did you like the last one? What did you think of the last one?
I liked the last one.
Okay.
The only thing that stuck out to me here was highlighting Jennifer Lawrence, who has never been a major character in these First Class movies. Mm. And it felt that's where I felt pandered to, was like, all right, you've basically given me every line Jennifer Lawrence has in this movie because Katniss Everdeen, and she's the hottest thing in Hollywood right now.
Yeah.
So that stuck out to me a little, but that's more trailer editing than what I thought the film looked like overall.
Yeah, she never seemed like she was in the last one, where and her star was burning pretty bright, and you know, by the time this last movie was out, and she, you know, it was subtle. It wasn't like she was being overused because of her stardom or whatever. And the same goes for Steve Jobs over there. What's his name?
Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, he doesn't hog up too much of the camera, which is good.
I like that he's Steve Jobs to you now. I think that guy from that one movie.
But the problem I had was, maybe this is the whole thing, and I'll admit it. The very end of it, and then, Bo, I want to hear your take. But at the end of the trailer, it closes with otherwise hippie hair Professor Xavier now in his black suit, in his wheelchair with the shaved head. And it just felt like, here's some fan service. Put your face in it.
Wait a minute. That's what I want to see that happen. I want to know how he gets there. Is that fan service to tell me that story?
Well, no. But how does he... make a good point. I want to see those things too. I don't know what it is. I don't know why I feel this way. I'm here to tell you. I think that it's irrational what I'm feeling from this trailer, but I'm feeling it nonetheless.
All right. Well, you know, X-Men is about a bunch of people that shoot lasers from their eyes and have, you know, sharp blades flying out of them and do weird things. Brian Singer, I think he's directing this. I saw his name in the trailer in any case.
Can you go rewrite all the Wikipedia articles on X-Men and give it that description? They all have blades coming out of themselves and
this
laser
guy
beams
can
in their
just,
eyes.
Like, he just flies, like, whatever. The point being that Brian Singer's, like, to me, he buys a lot of faith. He has a lot of credibility attached to this movie and to the ones preceding it, because I think his X-Men movie ushered in this new modern sensibility towards superhero movies to begin with. So I look at the trailer and I go, I'm reserving judgment because, you know, it's Brian Singer and he made X-Men 1 and 2, and those were really, really enjoyable films. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're superhero movies. I think if we get what we want, then they're lousy with costumes and special effects and all this kind of stuff. I felt like the trailer was pretty good. It's just, I've come to the point with superhero movies where I stop expecting Mad Max Fury Road. You know, I stop expecting, you know, Inglourious Bastards or any kind of movie that I'm really going to walk away from and be like, wow. Mm-hmm. Like, superhero movies are, you know, fantasies of power. And it's about very, very simple constructs of, you know, here's a guy with powers and here's some threat to humanity or to himself and he's going to overcome it. So I think the trailer looked good. I think sometimes we're, you know, looking at, we have so many superhero movies and superhero properties now that we kind of take it for granted a little bit, that they all have to be amazeballs. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's just where I put it on my expectation. I think the trailer looked pretty good and I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm not expecting this to be, you know, the best movie of all time.
Yeah.
You know, and, right. And so I'm very happy.
You have tempered expectations. Tom really liked what he saw. I don't know why I feel the way I do. I just want, you know what? I feel this way about Marvel. I'm kind of with Englehart in that non-Marvel controlled Marvel properties just don't feel the same. And that isn't necessarily bad. They may apply it. You know, I actually kind of like the last Spider-Man movie that everyone hated so much. I thought it was all right. But it certainly didn't hold up to, you know, Avengers or whatever. But then again, I don't think Ultron held up to its own prequel. So maybe what it is, I fear we're heading toward the bubble part of the hero genre, and that maybe
peak
that's
hero.
Yeah, maybe I'm just nervous about it. Maybe I don't want it to go away or I don't want it to get mired in the same tropes over and over and have too many, and every time something fails, like Fantastic Four comes out and just is a complete tank, you just kind of go, oh, that's not good for this thing I like, you know.
Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, the Daredevil and I started watching Jessica Jones, they've been kind of like, they're good enough to watch, but I wouldn't recommend them to anybody. They're not that good.
Really? Wow.
I'm not, you know, I don't find, like, they're, it's just.
That's surprising to me.
Yeah, I love Daredevil.
Yeah, me too.
It's like, I've been told this story many times, and this iteration is okay, you know? Ooh. And that's sort of how I look. Like, I wouldn't say it's bad or why do they make, I'm very happy that they're making these things, but I don't feel like it's necessary for me to rave about them either. And there certainly aren't, you know? And they have a place, and I think that's where they are, you know? And so the X-Men movies to me have carved out this nice niche where they do a lot of service, like Quicksilver in that Days of Future Past. That scene was amazing. I loved that, where he takes out all the people in the kitchen or whatever. Mm-hmm. So
it was the best thing in that movie, in my opinion. I loved it.
Yeah. And I there was a little clip of him in that next one. So, you know, he's coming back and he's going to run around real fast. And,
oh, good. They're keeping that version of Quicksilver alive. That's good to hear. Not that I'm spoiling anything about an Avengers film at all. When I say that,
don't know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
you don't know what I'm saying.
There's no Quicksilver.
Bo, I appreciate your even-handed approach to many things, especially this topic. So thank you for offering that and for being here. Bo Schwartz, oh man, you're a great guest. That's why we had you back. It'll surely happen again in the future. Tell people where you can be found on the internet besides right here, right now.
Okay, if you want to find out what I'm up to, just follow me on Twitter at Bo Schwartz, and you can find out all the things I do, like Core, the Heroes of the Storm podcast.
Yeah, we're doing one this weekend. We're going to talk about getting ripped off. Not really. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but
I don't know. I'm feeling pretty positive about some of the stuff. I think I'm going to be the level-headed person here, considering you know,
John was pretty worked
John,
up. Yeah. And I don't love it either. But we're doing a little experiment ahead of all this to see how this Heroes of the Storm Refer a Friend program actually works, and you'll learn all about it this weekend on the Core Podcast. So,
begun the Smurfs have.
What's that other show you do with your buddies? I always forget the name, but
Good, Better Bullshit.
Yeah.
For two of my good friends, we pick a topic at random from the random topic generator. It's a diesel-fueled engine that Mike keeps in his garage. We give that an old pull, and it spits out a topic, and then we argue with each other. And at the end of the show, we give a verdict on whether we think it's good, bad, or bullshit. We do topics ranging from prostitution, democracy, and flip-flops. Wow. Everything and anything under the sun, we talk about it.
Well, we know where we land on flip-flops, right? There's consensus on
that. Bullshit.
Yeah, I keep changing.
Total bullshit.
Flip-flopper.
That's amazing. Tom Merritt, anything going on in your neighborhood?
Yeah, so Pretend I'm Dumb About Star Wars is almost complete.
Oh, yeah.
I have done all six of the movies that have been released to theaters so far. So I'm very much looking forward to... I'm seeing Force Awakens twice, once as a fan, and then the second time I will pretend I'm dumb about The Force Awakens, which it's become really interesting because as I watch the movies, the character of me that's trying to be dumb does know things from previous episodes, and I have to keep that all straight in my head. But it's really been perspective shifting, and people seem to have enjoyed it. I've gotten some good feedback on Twitter. So if you're interested in rewatching along with me or going and just seeing what I have to say about the earlier movies, you can find it at tommerritt.com under PIDASW, Pretend I'm Dumb About Star Wars, over in the navigation, or on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/AceDetect.
I have really enjoyed that whole experiment. So
it is so fun.
It's so cool.
I'm glad other people are enjoying it.
Yeah, do this with other series and things that come along. Like
I'm thinking about it. Yeah. I'm kicking around ideas.
Yeah, I think you should. It's really good. Don't forget, you can find me all over the place, frogpants.com, but also a reminder that the Experience Point show, which used to be housed under the umbrella of the NVIDIA streaming channel, is now independent and just me and John Jagger and friends. So it's also a new time. Noon Mountain Time, it starts instead of 3 p.m. Mountain Time. It used to start, or 4 p.m., I guess. You can catch it on Saturdays. That'll be tomorrow at noon. It will run till 3. That's, again, all Mountain Time. You can figure out where you are and if you want to be there live. It's easy. Go to frogpants.com/Twitch. Follow the channel. Like it. Be there. Hang out with us. Should be a good time. Don't forget us at frogpants.cratejoy.com. And pick that thing up, you guys. Seriously, it's going to be so cool. I'm so jazzed about doing this. Thanks, Andrew Allen, for our theme music. Current Geek on Twitter is where you'll find us, at Scott Johnson, at Ace Detect. Currentgeek.reddit.com is again our Reddit page. You can email us, currentgeek@gmail.com, and currentgeek.com for everything else. It's gonna do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for Bo. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.